Hello and welcome to the West City Church podcast. If you'd like to get to know us more, find us at westcitychurch.com.au. We really hope that you're encouraged by today's message.
Thanks, Kelly. I learnt a long time ago that one of the really hard things about backpacking on your own is that you have to make a lot of decisions by yourself. All day, like, is it safe to leave my backpack here? Which bus should I take? What should I eat? That fish smells really dodgy. Should I eat the fish? Is it meant to smell like that? Should I have a little bit? How much should I eat? Which bus shall I catch? Making decisions is really exhausting. And I've learned that I'm capable of expending a huge amount of time and emotional energy decision-making. The time and energy doesn't even correlate to how big the decision is. Like when my tea towels all died, I spent months deciding what colour tea towels I would like to buy to replace them. Part of the problem is that ours is a consumer culture and there's just lots of choices. And part of the problem is that decisions matter. They affect other people. Like I don't want to buy something that supports slavery. I don't want to use something that causes cancer. I don't want to use words or embrace ideas that exclude certain demographics of people. So I've got to do a bunch of research and learning to make decisions. It's possible to overestimate how much one little person's decisions matter. Then I have to decide how much it matters. Maybe it's just vanity to think that everything I do has really important consequences. You may have experienced decision fatigue or decision paralysis. I've gone to bed hungry because I couldn't decide what to cook. So if you look on the internet, a really popular hack is to consider the idea of like sweeping blanket decisions. Like people who only wear black T-shirts, they never have to think about it. People who eat tacos on Tuesdays, people who check their email at 10 a.m. every day. One decision saving thousands of lots of little decisions. Works for little things like daily things, unimportant things. But I've also learned that making sweeping decisions is really useful for big things too. Like tucking every single child into bed every single night. Sometimes I want to and sometimes I don't want to. But I've decided it's a thing I do and so it's a thing I've always done. And some of the good stuff has come from that. Like saying thank you for the food before meals. Sometimes we're overflowing with gratitude. Sometimes we just say the words. But we do it because we decided we would do it. The thing is, it's really exhausting to go back to first principles every time you have to make a decision. Like you can't go back to square one and decide, is there a God, every time you want to say grace for a meal. You can't go back to, you know, what's the purpose of life on earth? What do I believe about what it all means every time you need to go buy some vegetables? There are really important things to think about, and we have to think about them, but at some point we need to decide on some working assumptions, just like we get on with other stuff. Like with raising children, not everything can be up for negotiation every time. Sometimes you get the blue cup. To be honest, I need to sometimes outsource my decisions to me on a better day when I was thinking more clearly and optimistically, and I just go with a plan I wrote because I decided to. There's a book called about the Christian life called A Long Obedience in the Same Direction. Sometimes it feels more like a long obstinacy in the same direction. I'm doing this because I said I would, damn it. You know, and occasionally it's glorious, like the story Danielle shared with us. Occasionally it's glorious and wonderful. Sometimes, but not always, I've found that there's enormous value in just keeping on doing the thing that we've decided to do, like being at church or listening online and coming to the table, drinking the bread and the wine and remembering, like, do I keep coming here because it really matters to me, or does it really matter to me because I keep coming? Maybe we choose an action once, but maybe over and over our actions are forming us. Making decisions all the time is exhausting. So in the absence of further information or evidence to the contrary, I've decided I'm just going to assume God is real and that Jesus is a good one to follow and that community is important and how we live matters. I'm just going to run with that. I couldn't actually think of anything I wanted to say today when Aaron invited me up because I haven't had any amazing experiences or amazing ideas. Nothing's happened. Like, what have I been doing? Just all that boring, daily, blah, 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 adult stuff I said I would do. So I'm hoping that there's something to be said for just turning up, just doing the thing, sticking with a decision that we made. I think on a really good day that looks like faithfulness, but for the most part it's just stubbornly putting one foot in front of the other on the path that we decided to take. It's glorious to be not alone on the path. So thank you for the community.
Hello. Hello. Come back to me. Come on back. Hello, everyone. I do love the fact that, you know, just a conversation reminds us we are the church. And we're people, and, you know, I travel a lot as part of my work, which is fantastic, and it's kind of like I'm travelling more and more. But this last 2 weeks I've just been in Australia, so I've just been in Sydney, Melbourne, Brisbane, and back to Melbourne, and then a little while I go up to Christmas Island again, and then I head off for... I'll go to East Africa this year, back to India, back to Cambodia. So I just have this fantastic life, I think. Not for everyone, but it's great for me. And part of my work, and I think people are people wherever you meet them in the world. Honestly, you could be in the poorest, very poorest village and if you are just who you are, you will find people who are just like you, even though they really don't look so. You know, and... part of the reason that we do Common Purse is we're like, can we all remember our humanity? Because sometimes what we make church giving to is about church operations. But once a year, for a whole month, we talk about the Common Purse, which is how do we actually put our monies together so that we can help people locally, which is what Daniel was talking about today, and globally, which is what we do through our overseas missions kind of area. It's just such a wonderful thing, I think, part of West City. I was actually in Cambodia a couple of weeks ago, about a month ago, and I just arrived, first day. I've been to Cambodia many times, like, I don't know, 30 times. So I haven't been there for 3.5 years. And you know when you kind of think you know it, you know, you kind of, oh, well, I know this place. So I had a phone in my hand and I was standing on a corner and I just arrived, first day, and I was looking for instructions and I got the phone out to just get back to a place I wanted to go to, and suddenly a guy comes flying down the road on his motorbike. He grabs it out of my hand and he keeps going. You know that moment you just think, I just can't believe this has just happened? Wind's around the corner, like he's gone and my phone has gone. So there's a panic in me, number one, because my phone was open. So I didn't have it locked because I was looking at it. So then I'm thinking, golly, if he stopped around the corner, I don't know if they can just have access to it. And then I didn't know where I was. So I was like, oh, golly, how am I even going to get to where I was going to go? So, but you know what? Pretty quickly I thought, that's just the way it is. I'm not going to worry about it. Can't do anything. Market is lost. Could not get into my Apple ID. Couldn't get another phone. Forget about it. Whatever is going to happen is going to happen. Quite good that I've kind of able to have that wiring in me. You know, it's not everyone's wiring right, but I have got that thing where I just go, not thinking about it. It's done. Didn't think about it again for that week till I got home. But you know what I was reminded of? That's the economics of poverty in much of the world. And the economics is, if you've got more, I take what you've got. Because I need it. And that can happen in every culture, right? There can be that kind of economics, which is, you know, it's a strong worldview around money. I take what you want because you've got more than me. And I see that everywhere. You know, this month at our here, we're talking about this theme called the economics of love, which is basically the biblical perspective on money. And I'm not here to give you some little pep talk. Right? I'm really not interested in giving you a pep talk, a little inspiration about why you should give. I'm not going to tell you a whole lot of sad stories to make you feel guilty about your giving or not giving. Because I can assure you that most of these outcomes are really short term. You may feel very inspired when you leave or very depressed, but really anything changes. Because what our position this month is to say, what is your perspective on money? Yours. You know, we're talking then about not thinking all the time and not making every decision. You actually have to think carefully at those times of your life and say, what do I actually believe? Because every day you can't afford to be saying, oh, every time I come to you, oh, should I give this week? Oh, haven't got enough this week, bad luck, oh, can't do it. Oh, this week, got a bit, oh, I'll pop it in. That is not how kingdom finance works. You've got to decide what you believe. That's this whole idea, no arm twisting, no manipulation, like choose. Money is neutral, but money is the core of so many relationships that break down. It breaks down marriages, number one cause of marriage breakdown, differences in perspective on money and therefore corresponding actions, because what you do is ultimately what you believe, not what you say, right? Breaks down families, more disputes about wills than almost anything at the end of a family. So sad, hey? Breaks down friendships, business partnerships, breaks down communities. And then we think, I don't want to think about it. You've got to think about it. Here's the position, what do you believe? And I was really lucky. I grew up in a home. I think I was lucky, but it depends, again, where you come from. I grew up in this home where my father and mother, anything about money was like completely neutral in the home in terms of when you've got it, you just give it away. You just do not hold on to it. My dad used to say, easy come, easy go, plenty more where that came from. Even when we had nothing. Easy come, easy go, plenty more where that came from. It sometimes looked like nothing, but anyway, we always just believed that was the way it went. But it was this beautiful sense. Money can never have a hold on you. It must remain your servant. And they used to say that. Don't let it rule. It's got to remain your servant. Then it's beautiful. There's this scripture which was in the Proverbs. Cast but a glance at riches and they are gone, for they will surely sprout wings and fly off to the sky like an eagle. I believed it then and I believe it now. I've had good days, I've had really dark days in financial terms. But I can tell you, the trajectory has been enough. And I've never earned much money. I've worked in not-for-profits my whole life. And I sit here in my 60s thinking, how on earth has God been able to provide for me? I reckon the reason I think about this, one of my favourite scriptures is Proverbs 14:2. I'm sure you all know it. Just want to tell me what it is? I know it's a funny scripture, but it's always been one that I have just loved. And I think it's this idea about having your positions on things, like knowing what you believe. And it's this. It's a wise woman builds her house, but a foolish woman tears it down with her own hands. A wise woman builds her house and a foolish woman tears it down with her own hands. And I've always taken that house metaphor as being, can be lots of things, but it's you. The scripture talks about you as a house, talks about your home, your family home, talks about your tribe, talks about your community, and then it talks about nations. So it's this whole idea, we often blame everything else for destroying our house. Circumstances and this person and ill health, and I'm telling you, scripture says a wise woman, she builds it, and a foolish woman, she tears it down with her own hands. And I've always thought, I'm going to be this wise woman. I'm going to build a house that truly stands in life. And that's, for me, is one of those things you're thinking about, what you actually believe about things. And one of the houses in this, one of the really important houses, rooms in this house is the financial room. It's really important what you believe about it. Now, I was also pretty good at maths. Is anyone else pretty good at maths? I quite like maths, but I never heard about BODMAS in my life. But anyone else? I didn't understand. Have you heard that thing, BODMAS? Is it BODMAS or BIDMAS? Anyway, it's the BOD BID business, you know. Again, I don't quite get it because it didn't make any difference. I never heard about this when I was at school. So how did this suddenly appear? But anyway, let's just accept it's a fact now. And this is the idea that when you come to calculate a sum, it's got a particular order, right? Yeah, all the younger guys are nodding at me and the rest of you look vacant. So come on, just make sure. So this is a bindas. Yeah, well, okay, well, there's another way of saying this. Bidmas, I looked it up. Oh, well. Bindas, and they said bodmas, so I'm going with this one. So don't worry about it. So this is the idea, is that first thing, you've got to do what's in the brackets. Second thing, the order of calculation is important. And then here's the four operations, the operations of division, multiplication, addition, and subtraction. And they've got a particular order when you're doing a calculation. Yeah? Now, this is the what of maths. And may I say, this is often the way that churches talk about money and finances with God. Right? We have this logic equation is the way we're going to talk about money. So we have the division principle. What's the division principle we talk about? We talk about money and scripture. Come on. What's this? What is the concept of division? It's the fact that you divide up what you have, right? Share what you have. That's a good. I'm very proud of you having a go there, Mel. I would like to give. If I was a teacher, I'd be giving you a gold star for that little work. But it's the fact that we divide what we have amongst everyone, so that everyone can have enough. Yeah, you've all heard that principle. Oh, golly, you're looking very vacant today. I want a lot more intelligence from the audience. So it's this, and the scripture talks about it and Phil talked about it last week, that in the book of Acts, they took what they had, they put it into a pot, and they divide it amongst everyone so that everyone doesn't have to go without. That's one really strong principle, a what principle about what scripture says about money. Let's make sure that we divide what we have, bring it and share it amongst us. It's quite in Acts 2, it says, all the believers were in one heart and mind. No one claimed that any of their possessions was their own, but they shared everything they had. And with great power, the apostles continued to testify. God's grace was so powerfully at work to them. And from time to time, those who owned land or houses sold them, brought the money from the sales and put it at the apostles' feet, and it was distributed, divided amongst those who had need. That's the division principle. We like that one, don't we? It's important. Second principle we talk about is the multiplication principle. We often talk about multiplication. What do we mean? What's the concept that's talked about? We talked about multiplication in Scripture. And when it comes to money, what does the Scripture say? Pardon? Fishes and loaves, that things can be multiplied, that when you give them into God, into God's kingdom, God's not about, you know, robbing you. He's about multiplying what we have, right? And it's a great principle that I do believe it. Give it in Luke 6:38. Give and it will be given to you. They'll pour into your lap a good measure, pressed down, shaken together, running over, will be given to you in return. This idea that when we give to God, you're not giving into a pot that you're never going to see again. In a way, God actually is a God of multiplication. It's a great principle. It's a great thought. It's not the whole picture. Because also the adding principle or the adding operation, addition. And this is the idea that when you have need, sometimes you're the one in need, like in the local purse. And you come and you say, can someone help? And you just get it added to you. I remember a young man, this is years ago in church, and I very rarely ever been part of doing this in church, you know, for good reason, I'm sure, but there was a young man who had an accusation against him that meant he had to have a legal case. And this legal case was going to cost his family, I don't know, $150,000, I'm pretty, just for the basic fee. And it was a situation which was very antagonistic. And as a church, the family just looked at us and, you know what we just said? We're going to take up an offering. And we covered the whole lot. There's a time when addition is small and there's a time when addition is big. And that's appropriate. But it's only one part of the picture. Because sometimes there's a subtraction. And sometimes this concept we teach as well is give freely. No strings attached. In fact, you may never get anything back from that. It's a cost. Because there's costs in the kingdom. You see, that when we think about the water scripture, we often want to just emphasize one, and all of those things are part of the economics of love. There's a time to divide, there's a time to multiply, there's a time to add, and there's a time to subtract. But the risk even with that is we end up making this an equation, a lovely little equation, division plus multiplication plus addition plus a subtraction equals enough for all. Enough for all. And on one hand, believe me, I love that because I'm a very logic person. But I can just say, when you start to want to make an equation out of God and out of faith, it's laziness. It's laziness because it becomes just behaviours. And God is actually not that interested in behaviour modification. The beautiful, magnificent thing about God is he's always cared more about you and ultimately your heart, because that's what's taking you somewhere. Guard your heart, for out of it are the issues of life. It's not about guard your behaviours, because out of it are the issues. Guard your heart, because it's what happens in here, which is ultimately going to tell us whether we're doing the right thing with money or not. And this is incredible scripture which says, Matthew 22, 37 to 40, and Phil talked again about last week, and it says, Jesus replies, you must love the Lord your God with all your heart and all your soul and all your mind. And this is the first and greatest commandment, and the second is like it, love others like yourself. And then he says, remember this, guys, the entire law, every principle, whether it be doing good or economics, or morality hangs on this. In other words, if you can do all the right things, but the entire law and all the demands of the prophets, they're based on the two commandments. Of loving God and loving people. This equation only makes sense when it hangs off that principle. It's not a transaction with you and God. You aren't doing the right thing by him when you give money. You're actually saying, I love you. You're not giving to people, you're saying to people, I love you. This is a room in your house that should not be redecorated every day. It's got some things that are set in that hand, that room. And may I ask you not just to make them set based on operations, but based on a heart that says, I will love God and I will love people to the core of my being. And when they see that, that's really when they see him. And one expression is the way I use my money. I will not buy things that have been abused on the abuse of other people. I will not use an uneven scale, which is I deserve more and that person deserves less. I will not, as an employer, live like that. This is the complete picture of the biblical economics of love. It's not a set of mathematical operations hinging on good sense and generous hearts. It's a series of actions that lead to seeming financial gains and losses, rewards and sacrifice, designed to ensure that money is your servant and that everyone has enough. But even this explanation is not sufficient to explain the God-inspired perspective on money, because God always has deeper things on his mind. He's always about motive and source. Why do we do what we do? And when it comes to him, when it comes to him and following money, like everything else on the kingdom, it hangs on loving God and loving people. May the common purse at West City never be an exercise in doing good only. Being generous, sharing what we have because it makes good sense, but an exercise of extravagance, cascading from a deep sense of loving God and loving people. May we fan the flames of love for God and our fellow man every time we give. May we never pass out those buckets and look at them as buckets. May we never go online and think, oh, you better do this. May I say, it's my act of loving God and loving people, and I will do this, because in turn, our giving and our perspective on money will be changed in this bedrock foundation, kind of house we want to build. It's what money means at West City. I hope it means that to you. And if it doesn't, I hope you just think about it and get really clear, because it will affect every area of your life for the rest of your life. But when you get it right, you can't even believe the freedom it brings. So with that, we're going to come to the table. And this is, when you think about money like that, the table's not like, oh no, now we're going to do something completely different. The table is a way that we love God and we love people. Just another way. So those who are going to serve the communion, can you come up and get ready? At what we do at West City is we come down the front and we take the cup and we take the bread, and someone speaks a blessing over us. And I pray that you sense God's presence in you. And I actually ask, and I'm going to just pray before this finishes, that you take the time to get your perspective on money really clear. You never let money rule you. May you always be in charge. God, I pray. Oh, money has a way, God, of ruling us. It rules through fear. It rules through power. It rules through poverty. It rules through abundance. And yet it's just a thing we hold in our hand. And God, I pray that at West City we hold it loosely. That it comes and it goes. But while it's in our hand, God, we use it with wisdom. There's times to multiply, times to divide, times to add, times to subtract. But God, we choose to honour you and always do it out of a heart that says we love God and we love people. So let me call you to the table. This is the table, not of the church, but of the Lord. It's made ready for those who love God and for those who want to love God more. So come. You have got a tiny little bit of faith, and you who come for the first time, you who come here often, you have tried to follow and you have failed. Come, because it is the Lord who invites you, and it's God's will that those who want Christ should meet him here. So why don't you stand, and as we sing, come to the table.
How good was that message? Thank you so much for joining us. Each week at West City, we say a benediction together. We do this because we believe that the purpose of the church is to be a caring community for the world, and that as we go and serve others, we enter into Christ's work of welcome, restoration, and healing, both for us and others. We believe that in doing so, we get to see and encounter Christ. So let's say the benediction together. We come together as the church to be reminded of the go of Christ. So we will go out and feed the hungry, go out and clothe the naked, go out and fight for justice, go out and end oppression, go out and proclaim anew the old, old story, go out and associate with those who don't look like us, think like us, act like us, and don't even like us. And we'll do it all in the name of the one who sent us.